This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Power 98.7, it is Power Perspective. We have 20 minutes left, and our last guest, of course, joined us in the previous conversation. I deliberately brought him into that conversation so that he also could just partake in it, because I just saw the need for someone like himself who might be better placed to ask a more relevant question for the kind of conversations we're having at the moment. Sandile Mkhize, I welcome you now formally to Power 98.7. Thank you for the engagement. You did bring value to the previous conversation. And so welcome to the show.
No, thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for the listeners as well for having us on.
Sandile, you've got a story and a journey to tell. And you're a paraplegic, which I asked you before, a software engineer and student as well. So let's talk about the paraplegic part, because it eventually talks to your life journey in essence then. So let's talk to about how you would have got there.
I think I pretty much had an average childhood, like most people that grew up in South Africa.
Sure.
And then in 2013, in January, I was unfortunately involved in a motorcycle accident, which left me paralyzed from the chest down. So I wasn't always a paraplegic. I wasn't born this way.
Yeah.
It just happened from a spinal cord injury, which, like I said, left me paralyzed from the chest down.
Okay, so what begins to make you not give up there? Because from the chest down, that talks to the extent of the injury in itself. What goes through your life, or what phases do you begin to go through just to understand where you are now in your new cycle of life? Was it something you really, really had to come to terms with in the beginning phase?
Well, that's the thing, right? I think, and please understand that I speak for myself here.
Absolutely.
I'm not necessarily speaking for everyone else. I think you come to terms with things at different stages in your life. So
yeah.
when it initially happened, I think I had the mindset where, you know, I accept that this has happened, and you know, before this particular point, I've been able to conquer everything that's been thrown my way. So this was just another, you know, challenge and another obstacle to get.
Yeah, I was about to say that if you were conquering things, then obviously, you know, you got thrown another one, you know.
Exactly, but unfortunately, it's not easy. It's not easy because I went through a lot of complications, and I actually stayed in hospital and rehab facilities for 2 years. The first 2 years of my accident was basically hospital food, rehab, and over 30 surgeries. But then, you know, just a trigger warning to any of the listeners, I'll be touching on, you know, sort of suicidal thoughts. There really came a point where, you know, you just want to give up, or you feel like you're a burden to, you know, not only the people around you, but to society in a certain extent, because you don't feel like you have anything to contribute. And then I guess in that darkest of, you know, times or darkest of moments, honestly, I came to the conclusion that I do not want my parents to bury their child. I think the guilt and the pain of that really switched everything on for me, where it was like, okay, I'm deciding that I'm not going to end things. I want to stick around. And if I'm going to stick around, I might as well, you know, try to push this as hard as I can and to see how far I can go with it. And that's honestly what I've been doing ever since, you know, 2015, 2016. It's been good. It's been bad. It's been hard. It's been ugly. It's been beautiful. But I guess that's just, you know, my journey, and I'm trying to live it and to go through it as best as I can.
The darkness you talk about, how deep does that get? How lonely and alone does that get?
Well, I think this applies to a lot of people.
I'm trying to establish how important friends and family are here.
Yeah, for sure. I'll also be the first to say that I'm very fortunate that I have a really good, you know, support structure in terms of family and friends that would sometimes, you know, literally carry me out of the darkness or give me a bath if I needed to get a bath then. But I think what a lot of people with disabilities tend to struggle with, or people that go through traumatic injuries and survive them, is that everybody wants to make a hero out of you, right? Everybody makes you feel, and I'm not saying that this is incorrect, but, you know, people are inspired by your story, or they're inspired by your persistence. And that's beautiful. That's a beautiful thing. However, sometimes the weight of it all and the fact that, you know, you have to carry this burden on a daily basis does become difficult. It does become tough. But I think this is not unique to people with disabilities. I think everybody has particular demons or issues that they're trying to work through. And, you know, the human experience is not to be happy 100% of the time. We're going to struggle, and learning how to deal with the struggle sometimes is the tricky part, because it can get overwhelming. Life is not easy. Yeah.
That weight of it all that you speak of, and you talk and I love the way you say, you know, when people look at you and they want to make a hero of you, and you talk about the weight of it all. In your interaction with people, do you find that people generally don't understand that the journey that you're traveling is your journey and not theirs? And in a sense, that projection of whatever they're trying to project, in essence, good or bad, you know, and the effect it has on you, is still your journey. Is there a recognition that, you know, you find that people might not understand the place you're in or the journey you're going, because they have to be sympathetic, they have to be positive, they have to do all the kind of things, you know, around you? I'm looking at that dynamic. Is that an awkward kind of irony thing that happens at that point?
Well, I think I will start with disagreeing with you, in the sense that people don't have to be sympathetic. People don't have to necessarily be sensitive, or people don't have to care. I think the same way that I don't particularly have to try to inspire, nor would I want to, you know, do A, B, and C. But I think it all boils down to what we find valuable and important in life. So in my own personal journey, I think there was a large time where I enjoyed, you know, well, I still enjoy it now, you know, where people will come up to me and, like, they speak about, you know, my resilience and my ability to overcome has inspired them to do A, B, and C. But in all honesty, there was a period where I felt that, you know, I got a trophy, or I'm being celebrated for something that
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So, you know, I just feel like I just survived. I did nothing special. However, I got a really humbling message from a complete random stranger on Facebook, who basically inboxed me and said, you know, I saw your documentary on TV, and I was going to kill myself. She's a single mom of two. And just the mere fact of, like, hearing how I was able to sort of, you know, deal with my struggles and take things a day at a time, it truly humbled me, because I'm not arrogant enough to say that, you know, if my struggles are able to help the next person, that is not something that shouldn't mean anything. And, you know, not to throw biblical references, but that's my cross to carry. And I'm choosing now to carry this cross, because if this is my way of sort of leaving this world, you know, a better, leaving it better than I found it, then I'm going to continue to spread this positivity and this love as much as I can, because we're all going through something. And sometimes it's difficult for people to articulate what they're going through, because language sometimes can be a problem. However, when you see somebody like me who has, you know, physical limitations or physical issues that you can see they're struggling with, it's a lot easier to sympathize, because you don't need words for that. You can be like, man, if this person can do this in this situation, I should be able to do. I should be able to overcome my demons. And understanding that dynamic, not only has improved my mental health, but it helps me get out of bed the days that I don't want to.
Well, let's talk about the days you get out of the bed. Wings for Africa Life Run. Tell me about that.
Oh, yeah. So the Wings for Life World Run is an amazing race that happens around the world at the exact same time. When I say the exact same time, I'm talking about in Joburg, in South Africa, we start running at 1 o'clock. In New York, they're running at like 8 o'clock in the morning, for example. So everywhere around the world, everyone's running. And 100% of the money raised from the entry fees goes towards spinal cord research.
Right.
Now, for obvious reasons, this is something that's very close to me.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because, you know, I want my spine to be cured, because, you know, I think I'm more useful after my injury to the world. Mm. But I think it's an important thing that, you know, so many people that come together to try to solve such an important problem and, you know, prevent, you know, future kids or future people or future generations, you know, having to go through the trauma that we went through. Mm. I think that's worth, you know, contributing. And there's been so many like amazing advancements. So it happened this year, and hopefully you'll have me on again to try and get some of your listeners to join us next year as well for the run.
So when did it happen? So that we're aware of it, and we can put things on our calendar, and we can actually, you know, just you know, in essence, be aware, and then in some form contribute in a way.
Yeah, sure. So this year it happened on the 8th of May.
Right.
So there are sort of like flagship runs that happen around the world. So where there's actual stadiums. In South Africa, it was a virtual run. However, we all got together in Fourways and in Cape Town. We also had some space. So next year, I'm not too sure of the date at the moment, but it will be probably the first week of May as well.
Right.
So yeah, that's the date.
How what do the logistics look like? Is it and who runs and so just explain that aspect to me. It's able-bodied people just running and contributing, or just give me the logistics around it.
Oh man, this is what makes this race also particularly special, is that it's for everyone.
Oh, brilliant.
Professional runners, amateur runners, wheelchair users, toddlers, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So initially people find it weird when we say this, but there actually is no finish line. There is no finish line for the Wings for Life World Run.
Oh, wow. That's a beautiful term. I'm going to write that down. There is no finish line.
So what actually happens...
Wait. Before we carry on, Sandile, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to steal that line, man.
Oh.
I'm going to steal that line. I'm upfront about it. I'm really upfront about it, Sandile. I'm going to steal that line.
Well, I think maybe to be like a little bit more technically accurate, the Wings for Life World Run, just like life, has a moving finish line. So there's something called a catcher car, which basically chases you instead of you running, you know, whether you want to run 8 kilometers or so. So with the catcher car, regardless of, you know, how far you want to go, it all depends on your pace. So if you want to run 3 kilometers, you can. If you want to run 10 kilometers, you can. I mean, the two individuals that won it this year, the male runner ran 64 kilometers and the female runner ran 56. Mm. So if you want to run 200 meters or you want to run 60 kilometers, it's for everyone.
Right. And it's all about funds, right? For the medical research that you're talking about. So mm-hmm. Do you find that across the world, the races run at the same time? So, and here in South Africa, the funds then particularly would be used, you say, for the spinal cord research, right?
Not only the South African funds, but funds from around the world. So
right.
There is a Wings for Life World Run fund, which funds specific scientific labs.
Mm.
So whether it's laboratories that are working on robotics, stem cell research, or some form of, you know, medical enhancements to help repair spinal cord injuries, the Wings for Life World Run Fund funds those directly. So, for example, if you enter into the race, it will cost you 199 rand in South Africa. 199 rand goes straight into the scientific lab. It is not taken by the organization. Administrative fees, nothing. And 100% of the money goes towards science. Mm.
Yeah. So we're talking about that spinal cord, because I raised the issue of funds, but I'm talking about that spinal cord research. And you and there's something you said when you spoke about spinal cord research and the funds and the money that goes anywhere. And you said, it's not like you want to be able to walk one day so that they could fix. Where in the research, Sandile, if you're aware, or if you've, you know, been looking up at that, where in the research are we around actually getting to a place where someone like you, with the medical research that's being done and the medical technology and the funding that then comes in, because obviously, you know, the two are related, and you've got to constantly, you know, fund these research projects that are happening around something like, you know, the spinal cord. Where are we in the research space to suggest that one day, and how close are we there, that one day someone like you would actually have something done, some kind of operation done, that actually then sees us as people overcoming this kind of medical?
So I think it's important to note that there's different aspects and different sort of stages of research that are being funded. Mm. So a lot of the initial funding at the moment, and which we, I think everybody has the consensus and agrees that somebody like me, who's been, you know, a paraplegic now for 9 years, almost a decade, the research is not necessarily to try and fix my broken back. This research at the moment is for newly broken or individuals who go through a recent spinal cord injury, because remember, there's always going to be a time frame which is called, I forgot the actual term for it now, but it's a very sensitive area or it's a sensitive time frame where a lot of, you know, healing and a lot of fixing of the spine can happen very quickly. So there's that aspect that's being funded. And I mean, somebody like Mikhail Rakoti, I think, that started walking again this year. And last year as well, we had another individual who actually was paralyzed the year before, but started the Wings for Life World Run while walking. You know, he took his first few meters while walking. So we've already like made some huge steps in that. Now, the cool part for, you know, people like me who have had a spinal cord injury, however, this is sort of resource intensive. Hey, man, you can strap me in an exoskeleton suit and I'll be able to do my walking, you know?
Yeah.
With some assistance. However, in terms of, you know, solving or trying to fix broken backs that, you know, have been injured for an extended period of time is not necessarily where the priority in the science is right now, which makes absolute sense.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you need to solve the new cases first.
But in essence, if you keep funding and you keep the research going, you never know where the medical could go.
Progress is always exponential.
Yes.
I mean, not even 10 years ago, our phones could do, you know, a fraction of what they can do now.
Yes.
So I think this is the same with any medical advancements. Once we crack the code, people will optimize the code, and I think the implications of that will be far-reaching, and hopefully we'll end up reaching people like me who've been paralyzed for many, many years.
Sandile, what makes you get up every day and look at the world and say there is no finish line?
That's a bit of a deep question. if I have to be honest, I think it has to do with the fact that I try to fall in love with my story. Mm. And what I mean by that is, you know, sometimes we all have regrets. We all wish we were this, we wish we were that, we wish this didn't happen and everything. Mm. And for me, like, trying to fall in love with my story over and over, because, you know, sometimes I'm in love with it, sometimes I'm not. It's just a realization that I am the architect and I am the author of all of this. And I need to focus simply on that. I have loved ones that I love dearly. And I have loved ones who care for me dearly as well. And I would love to spend more time with them. But if I'm going to spend more time with them, I might as well, you know, spend more time with them in a Ferrari and, you know, solving world hunger instead of just feeling sorry for myself and locking myself in a room.
Sandile Mkhize, it's been a pleasure talking to you, mate.
Lovely talking to you too, brother.
Yeah. Sandile Mkhize, well, it's not the last time, first and last time we'll be chatting, because obviously lots of things happening in your space and you lots of things that you need to wake up every day to and get done. And I told you there is no finish line. I'm stealing the line. So when you see it out there on Twitter or whatever, and there's a Denzel Taylor next to it, You know I have officially told you, Sandile.
No worries, brother, no worries. But we will see you guys next year at the Wings for Life World Run for sure.
Sandile, we'll see you before that. But absolutely. Sandile Mkhize, thanks for joining me here on Power Perspective on Power 98.7.
Thanks, brother. Cheers.
Sure, mate. And that's Sandile Mkhize, of course, software engineer and student, paraplegic, talking to me about his journey and what a journey, of course, it has been.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.